Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon. It's not another Friday afternoon. Well, it could be. It could be. If you're into time travel. But on this occasion, we're not. None to the point. It is a fantastic afternoon, evening, morning, depending on where you are. And I hope you had a happy Christmas. It's another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/Sideshow and Sideshow.com. In my company today is a lady, well known to me at this stage of the game, Claudia de Jong. Did I pronounce that right, Claudia?
You were very good at that. Say it again.
Claudia de Jong.
Yeah, perfect.
I should announce you out over the tannoy system at the new King's Cross tube station. Claudia de Jong to the... Now I sound a bit like Stephen Bennett, don't I? I've done it, yeah. Claudia, what do you do
platform
for...
Platform 7, please.
Are we going to do... Is this what we're going to do, the whole interview? Yeah. Claudia de Jong to platform 7. Claudia de Jong, please.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Mind the gap.
Back, by the way, number 7 today, on the just in case.
Well, we're nowhere near the Grand National because people are listening to this in the future. But should you be into time travel, we're back there again. Let's try and start the interview if we can. What do you do for a living?
I am now what's called a garden designer, which I always find quite amusing because I think of it as a new term, garden designers. I don't think we ever used to think of people that gardened and looked after gardens as designers as such, but that's what we've all been called now. So I design, I used to have a landscape company, I used to have people to build as well, and I did the whole build and design, but now I just design and plant.
What's changed, Claudia?
For me or for the industry or...
Both.
For me, I think I'm getting on a bit in my years.
And we are.
Well, yes, and I think...
Some of us have aged better than others, I should add, including my fine self. I'm only joking.
He's saying that looking at me, I might tell you. Yes, this has been a particularly hard build at this show anyway, but we'll talk about that a bit later. But I started off in landscaping before I started designing, because I'm the sort of person that wants to know exactly how something's built. I want to know the construction methods. I want to do the stuff myself, and I worked with somebody that helped me understand construction and got me onto diggers, and in that way I could see from the bottom up, which I think is very important. I've never studied horticulture, I've never been to college. This has all been a passion and something that I've really, really enjoyed doing.
I think it's hugely important though that you get to draw a garden and you know how long the construction is going to take. I would detail it down to the man-hour unit on a garden build, on a garden show build in particular. But I know how to calculate those man-hour units because I've driven that mini digger. I know I'm going to allow 2 hours in for the driver not to turn up late because it happens. Things don't always go according to plan, but the scheduled end date, complete date of the garden won't waver at all. You don't get an extra 2 days irrespective of weather or delays.
You're saying you don't, or you because you do in some cases. I mean, when you know how long something's going to take, you plan it all, but you can never say you know how long something's going to take because you don't know the ground conditions. You don't know. You can estimate, for example, the garden when we came to do the Ascot Flower Show, we looked at the ground and at that point, we saw that it was on a slope, but we didn't see to the degree that it was on. We didn't see that there was concrete under the ground. There are also many factors that you don't see what's beneath the ground. So at eye level, you can estimate something's going to take a certain amount of time, especially on a new build, for example. I've worked on a new build in a housing estate where, unfortunately, the builders have decided to throw all the old bricks, etc., into the ground. Until you dig that out, you don't know what's there.
I guess that's got an added knock on financial, and that seems to be the thing that builders are doing. To be fair, now they're selling off the good topsoil and the subsoil is then used for the garden because they're not having to pay then to dispose of the poor soil, and they're getting paid to get rid of the expensive soil. Are you coming across that a bit?
A little bit, but what I would say, and I think it's something that every person that has their garden landscape should take into account, is that if you can get rid of the soil or debris on your own land, you save yourself a lot of money. I mean, there's so much money in having skips and having grab lorries and taking all the muck away. And a lot of money can be just sewn up in something like that, which people don't consider. Mm. So if you can use it to your advantage, you can landscape it, you know, somewhere within the garden. That saves people a lot of money, but they don't think about these added costs.
Well, I've built gardens for six figures, and I can tell you, on one of them that was six figures, that approximately half was put into removing 7, 8, 9 trucks of soil by hand down the side alley by barrow. That's 200 ton. That's 40 wheelbarrows per ton. It's a ridiculous timeline. And it's not seen in the end result. So when they turn around and say, oh, my garden cost, I'll be fictitious here for a minute, but my garden cost 100 grand, everybody will rightly say, it doesn't look like a 100 grand garden.
Exactly.
Because it's not.
Yes, no, and I can completely understand. And if someone came to me and said, it's going, you know, because when you have your garden designed and built, as I said before, it's quite a new concept. You know, I mean, everyone, to a degree, considers himself a gardener, and it's a hobby to a degree. So I think the concept of actually paying someone to do a landscaping job or design your garden for you is actually relatively new in the last sort of 20-25 years perhaps, and becoming obviously much more common now. But there are all these hidden costs, and it's not something you immediately see, and you have to sit down with clients and you have to explain this, that, you know, when you go through, hopefully, a very well, I was going to say constructed estimate, but I can't think of the right word, but when it's detailed, and hopefully you probably ask three landscapers to give you quotes, but if you go and sit down with the client and you say, look, this is where the cost is, and explain that, then maybe they'll understand a lot better, you know, that there is a lot of work involved under the ground just as much as on top of the ground.
Well, the three quotes thing, while you stumble on it, as per usual with the Sideshow, there is no real set agenda, just myself and Claudia having a chat. But that three quotes thing slightly gets on my nerves.
Why is that?
I'm now being interviewed. No, it gets on my nerves because, it gets on my nerves. For the greater part, if you select, let's say, Claudia de Jong, Peter Donegan and Claudia de Jong and Peter Donegan, I don't know, three variations of a me and you, people who you know their work is good, you've done the research a little bit on them, which is a little bit easier nowadays to see, is what they say on the opening of their page of their website, is that what they're actually going to deliver? Then yes, go and get three quotes off. But in that department, I would consider that you and me probably would be on par on price. I'm not going to be 50 grand dearer than you on 100 grand.
I'm not talking so much about price here, and I think that's the problem. I think you form a relationship when you're doing a private garden with the people that you're working for. And I think that a lot of the time when I've done work, people have chosen me because we get on. And there is that relationship. You're coming into someone's private space. It's their home. And you're there for sometimes quite a long time. And you're forming a relationship for them. You know, you have to get on with them. And I think that's why sometimes I'd say, you know, it's important to not just look at a quote, because someone might say, well, I've chosen the most expensive one out of the three, but it's just because there's a meeting of minds there, and you understand the person better, and you know how you're going to work together. So that's what I would say.
Well, I hear the tales of woe, and I'll give you a random statistic. In 2016, 54% of my work was undoing work that was done by others in the 8 years previous. So I'm scratching my head saying, what happened? Of that 50 to 60% of work that I undone and then redid, it transpired that 70% approximately of that work was work that I already quoted for. But in one case, bearing in mind this is 10 years ago, I'm going to get a little bit botanical Latin here, one of them I had priced for, inverted commas, bamboo. I had chosen a Fergusea, which, let's say, only ever grows to 8 foot tall maximum, going in at 6 foot tall. They had chosen a Phyllostachys aurea, which grows to 40 foot tall and essentially spreads like wildfire. We used to plant it into the concrete cylinders that you use for putting drainage in underneath roads, so it didn't expand out too far. Or they got the job because they were the cheaper quote. Now, if you're saving on putting in a plant that's 160 quid or 120 quid, they're putting in that's 40 quid and there's 200 of these required. It's not that I'm pricing incorrectly, it's that I'm pricing the job, in fact, correctly for the right plant, for the right garden, for the right client.
Exactly, but did you have that conversation right from the beginning with the client to explain this? This is what I'm saying. I'm saying if you sit down with your, you don't just send an estimate and just expect them to, you know, you actually sit down, you actually almost present it and say, let's go through it together, let's, you know, talk through, and then in that way, they'll choose you anyway, and you won't probably have to have the two or three quotes or whatever.
Well, I'm 17 years in business as Donegan Landscaping, and yeah, I know I'm not being interviewed again, and we'll get back to Claudia, I promise. Like, I'm 17 years in business. Think if you're going to put in inverted commas, if there's a hedge to go in or if there's a bamboo to go in. And yeah, sure, I can explain it and say, well, this is the plant that I think is the right plant and this fits the brief and what you were talking and it fits the style and the schedule of what you're talking about. But they ultimately have an option to turn around and say, well, no, we're going to go with the cheaper price. One sec. Sorry, there's a this button there. Yeah, sorry, there's a lovely girl from Yardley just leaving the room and you'll hear the door slam. It's going to open in a sec again.
Yeah. I think that's the case in anything, isn't it? I mean, it's like people pay sometimes, that they're led by the cost, aren't they? So they'll pay for what they think the job is worth to them. And the hardest thing in this business is meeting people's expectations, you know, and you're only as good as your last job, as they say. So It's a very tough business. It's, you know, it's not all pretty flowers and all easy and everyone says, oh, you must have a lovely time, you know, just planting and it's all lovely and pretty flowers everywhere and everything. Mm. And you think, well, you don't know the half of it, you know, it's a proper full-on construction.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I was having a pint of Guinness about 3 weeks ago.
You.
Well, you know, it was a rarity, to be quite fair, on a Saturday.
Give me a drink, by the way.
She's cheeky, isn't she? The point was made from one of my friends. He said, you're expensive. And I said, no, I'm not expensive. I charge to do the job right. If the soil is terrible below the ground, I'm not sticking a few plants in, inverted commas, quote unquote, just for the sake of getting a bit of turnover off you. That's not the way to do it. I may lose a little bit of business if you want to put it on that angle. But at the same token, I sleep well at night time knowing I've charged a fair price for doing a garden that I will happily drive past and say, I did that. Not I did that one over there, but Jesus, honey, don't look over there to the left-hand side. It's terrible, but I made a fortune. That's not the game that I... That's not why I grew plants under my bed age five. It's not why I... Yeah, it's always about me, isn't it? This is like a... It's like a Bon Jovi bad music video, isn't it? I'm gonna
I don't want to know what else is on.
I don't live in my mom's house anymore, Claudia. Yeah, I'm going to jump on a Harley Davidson right off into the sunset now in a minute. But you're right, it is a tough business to be in.
It's a very tough business. And it is, as I say, it's a construction job when you're doing, especially using a lot of hard landscaping in a project. And it is difficult for people to understand that have never had their garden landscape before. It's a new concept. You know, we're all used to having perhaps a new kitchen or bathroom or, you know, decorating our homes. But when it comes to gardening, you know, as I said, most people will garden themselves and they won't, you know, have considered what's involved with a huge landscaping project.
Let's get back to...
I'm terrible.
I know, Claudia. I know. Sure, what can I do? Well, yeah. 2018, we've... probably speaking to a couple of people who were involved in the Ascot show, but you did a garden there which I stood in between the crowd and I listened to one girl outside your garden, and I think there was a voting thing for the garden if I remember correctly, and somebody said, oh, you should vote for that one, and she said, oh, I was already going to, and I was going, okay, fair enough, that's pretty. It was an easy win over, wasn't it? They just looked at it and liked it. The ultimate, when you see, as I always say, or invariably end up saying, when you see the woman on the far side of the bar and you're initially attracted to her, that's it. It's done. Your garden, to your credit, achieved that. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about that Ascot garden?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would would say sometimes they know that's a Claudia Dion garden, because there are certain aspects within some of my designs, not perhaps my older work at all, which was mainly around water gardens, big lily ponds and things like that at Hampton Court. But the garden at Ascot was really designed to help people understand landscaping and what is involved in the construction of landscaping. And this garden was designed for the Association of Professional Landscapers, which I'm a member of and also a committee member of. And I'm passionate about landscaping and helping people to understand it. So we designed this garden, Phil Tremaine from the association and I put together this plan to bring to the public's attention what is needed when you're having your garden landscaped. So the hard landscaping, we have glass panels over the paving. We had a glass panel over artificial grass because it was much easier to show people who may be considering artificial grass, where grass doesn't grow well on a north-facing garden or under trees or whatever. And decking area, we also have a glass panel to show people how you need to really look at the structure beneath the ground before you consider what paving you want to choose, what decking you want to choose, and other soft landscaping issues.
So I'm going to step into potential then murky waters. Is this the first time that you've ever had fake grass in a show garden?
She says, it's not, it's a very difficult subject.
Oh, phone. I thought I heard a dog barking there a minute ago.
It's an interesting subject. You have to call it artificial grass, I think. Mm. And actually, in the design, it wasn't a choice of mine at all. In fact, Phil suggested artificial grass, probably quite rightly, because you can show the actual method of laying it. You don't just roll it out like a carpet. You know, it has to go down with a proper base and structure underneath. But obviously, some people hate it. A lot of people would never use it. But it has a place, and a lot of people are actually using it inside as well as outside, funny enough.
Yeah, I heard that. And somebody said to me, I should get my office floor done in it. And then I got another phone call saying, well, no, the dogs keep going to the... because they think it's the real deal. That's where they're trying to go. And that solves that problem. I'll save myself a few quid and I'll get anything put down.
Well, it's interesting because I've laid it quite a few times on new builds where nothing will grow at all. Very heavy clay soils where there's just bricks, I said, from rubble, from house building and such like. And people have had dogs and they wanted a lawn, you know, of some means, and so I have used it for that purpose before. I mean, I think it has a purpose, so I think in some applications it works. On the whole, I'd love to have a natural lawn. That's my preferred choice. Yeah. Always will be. But in a very small space, sometimes it's rather than having hard paving, the artificial grass will work.
Yeah, but the difference, if it's all right to say this, but the difference is you balanced the lawn wasn't the entire space. I won't call it a garden, but the lawn wasn't the entire garden. And a lot of what I'm seeing now is we have an area we don't like cutting grass, fake grass, the entire thing, industrial estate fencing. Thanks very much. Honey, who said romance is dead?
Yeah, well, that's not... I wouldn't ever do that anyway. I think, personally, as you've just said, in this, the garden that was done at Ascot, it's a very small area of artificial grass. And if I had to have it myself, I think, again, I would have it in a very small area. It wouldn't be...
Well, my point, Claudia, is that you built a garden around that. You know, we talk about people decking, whether they're decking the entire garden over or whether they're fake grass and the entire garden over. And my point is always, it's a bit like the old Irish fables. Go out into the garden and take a little bit of a wildflower from that section and that section. But you don't pull the whole lot up from the one space and leave nothing for essentially the birds and the bees. And in your garden, you did have a section of artificial grass, but you had built a wonderful garden around that. And it's probably one of the first few times I've seen artificial grass used in a garden. But you essentially replaced the lawn area with a different type of lawn. But it's a real garden. It's not an industrial estate.
No, exactly. I mean, my style of gardening anyway is all about nature. It's all about trying to get as much nature into a garden. And I'm always trying to make everything sort of nestle in together and feel like it's part of. But I think, as you said, you have to have borders, you have to have flowers, you have to have plants. The idea of having just a artificial lawn and fencing with nothing else in it. Well, you know, why bother have anything, really? I mean, it's just an empty, bare space.
Essentially, yeah. Mm. Yeah. For those who may not be aware, you've done a few show gardens at this stage of the game. Bring me back over a couple of them, or give me your favourite one out of that batch. Where have you built?
Well, I started my show garden career, if you like, started in 2002. It was the year my father died, and it spurred me on to go into horticulture, which is something I always loved. And I was asked by somebody that had a water garden nursery to do a design, because I'd always been interested in gardening, had my own garden, and I came from a design background. So I started to draw little pictures, literally just pretty pictures, and they said, oh, well, let's go and build it. And it was at Hampton Court, and this was 2002. So I cut my teeth there, as it were. I ended up doing another, I think, 7 at Hampton Court. Was very fortunate to get some very good medals, best in gold and the Tudor Rose. And these were big water gardens. And then I've done gardens, trade stands at Chelsea. I've done gardens at BBC Gardeners World Live. Last year I got a gold and best in show for Wyville Garden Centres. The year before that, it was another APL Avenue, which they have at Gardeners World Live. Did a small garden there to show people how much you can get into a small space. So we had a very small paved area onto a lawn with a pond, through a little wooden gate into a wildflower meadow, with a shed, potting shed, and a vegetable patch. So that was to show the public how much you can get in a very small area.
There's a vacuum cleaner in the background. Sorry, Claudia, to cut across you.
So show garden-wise, I haven't counted how many I've done, but it's been an amazing experience. But doing a show garden is, as you would know, totally and utterly different to doing someone's private garden. You've got free rein to a degree, and you're trying to create a showpiece, which is only there for a few days. And it's nice to be able to talk to people. You know, you can be quite lonely sometimes working on your own, building a garden for somebody else. And with this, it's just nice to meet people and talk about gardening, and it's a lovely experience, although it's absolutely shattering. I think I've aged about 20 years having done the garden at Ascot.
Yeah, I'd still ask you out. Right, okay.
Could
cut it out. I'd probably leave it in.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's been a few marriage proposals, but they're mainly over cake and Guinness, to be quite fair.
Are we done?
No, a few more minutes. Come on. Do you not like doing interviews?
I'm not. Well, everyone's going to laugh their head off when they hear my voice, because they always say, "Oh, so I sound very grand on television or on the radio or whatever." And I hate my own voice. I'd much rather do it in another language. I wanted to be an actress, you see, and I'd be much better if it was a character rather than me. I don't think a lot of people enjoy talking about themselves.
Funny.
Apart from you, of course.
No, I rarely talk about myself. I remind people. I asked the questions, and I deviate off the point a bit. But invariably, if you've listened to all 370 something episodes,
I'm going to listen all night now
to my voice.
Sit in my hotel room tonight.
Why don't I just phone you
and plug in and listen to all your shows?
Really?
Yes, and I'm going to look up your work as well and see if I'd have employed you.
Yeah, And but I'll ask you the question seriously. Do you not like doing interviews?
I get very nervous, and I'm sure when I listen back to this, I'll hear myself sort of nervously talking and wobbling as I talk.
But is that why? Is it because you get a bit nervy that you don't like? You jest a bit about it, and I've had to essentially woo you to this quieter room to get it to happen. But it was important for me to do it out of respect for what you've done. And we've jested about this. Don't get me wrong, I didn't put her into a wheelbarrow. And that's okay, there's probably a picture.
Took me out. What? Took me out in this room.
Who says Peter never brought a woman on a good night out, you know? Hop in there, honey. But is there something about them? Do you think that's... Because you spoke to me before. You spoke to me before we went on air about how gardening has changed and the social media thing. And when I went out on my own, and when I started Donegan Landscaping, and when I started to, you know, win shiny things, there was no medium to tell them to. And it was the old adage of, well, you're too young to be in the newspapers. And now it's, well, you're not 20, so you can't be in the newspapers, because all we're supposed to write about is young gardeners. No disrespect to the young, fair play to you. It's about time the wheel shifted a little bit. Does that make sense with you?
No, it really makes sense with me. I also think that a lot, it depends on your personality, of course, but I think a lot of creative people, especially artisans and people that, you know, creative in any form, are quite shy people. I mean, I may come across as being, you know, joking around, but underneath I'm terrified and I'm shy. And I think when you talk about yourself, it's not something that automatically comes to me, because I get embarrassed. I don't want to talk about myself. I'd rather talk about you or the show or gardens or landscaping than me.
Which is essentially what I do.
Well, there you go. It's much easier, isn't it?
No, I do find it terrible. I hate taking compliments. Sorry, I'm terrible at taking compliments, and I don't like talking about myself. And if anybody knows anything about me over the 360 episodes, I'd be really surprised, apart from the odd sideshow bingo Peter plants under his bed stuff. But that's to do with horticulture. It's not that washing powder makes my one eyebrow grow longer than the other type of conversation.
It's being put in the spotlight, and I've given a lot of talks. I've gone to colleges as well, and in a college situation I'm fine when I'm with students and we're talking about horticulture, but if I'm standing up on stage and everyone's looking at me, it suddenly hits me, oh my God, all those eyes are looking at me and I'm making a fool of myself. And I think if I was in character, like I said, I wanted to be an actress, and I was playing a character and I was someone totally different, I'd be fine. But it's me. So the nerves start kicking in, and I know I'm going to say something stupid, which I invariably do.
I think you've done okay, to be fair. I think it's been a good interview.
And I haven't had a drink.
Well, that makes two of us. There's a next level to hear. I don't know. It's not 20 past two. They're in Salt Lake City. They're 7 hours behind. And they could be listening to this evening.
They could be, couldn't they? Who's they? The one listener.
The one. Well, that used to be the sideshow joke, though, wasn't it? We used to say when we did the radio thing, Brian would always say, I would like to thank our one listener out there. Sorry, all of our listeners out there for tuning in. Hi, Peter's mum. And that was it. And then I think I got a text off her saying, I don't listen to you.
Yes, I concur. I've listened to the wonderful one you did on Stephen Bennett talking about the inaugural Ascot show, which took place. And we had our Association of Professional Landscapers garden on. And I've listened to a few of your others on some very esteemed garden designers, Kate Gould and Catherine from McDonald. So I have listened to a few, but I will now make a point of turning off Coronation Street.
I've replaced Lionel Richie's greatest hits in her Spotify playlist. Claudia de Jong, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much. It's very kind of you. Can I do it in French next time?
You can say goodbye in French if you want.
Alors, je veux dire au revoir à tout le monde et merci. pour cette, I don't know what interview is anymore, l'interview. Voilà. Adieu.
That's it. Thanks for tuning in. That's our show on Twitter. Take that again. That's our show on Twitter, facebook.com/Sideshow and Sideshow.com. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Appreciate it so much. Take care. Bye-bye.